Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Online, tsn1050.ca. Brian Hayes, Dave Feshuk, the Toronto Star, Frankie Corrado. We got Jonathan Papelbon will join us here in a moment. People in Toronto very familiar with him, obviously, when he was in Boston. He was in Philly. And I'm looking forward to catching up with him.
Yeah, seems like quite the character.
Yes. He was saying some things about what he would do if he was still pitching and Tatis was in the box.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty vocal about how he would handle that. So we'll get him to explain it, and we'll catch up with him in just a bit. We got role play level of concern later this hour. I was Nick Cage over the weekend. We were up at a friend's cottage, and I ended up having to sleep on a pull-out couch for one night.
Oof.
Yeah, my daughter, my oldest, was adamant she wanted to sleep on it. Because it's a novelty, right? Like, the pull-out couch, it's rare. You don't see a lot. Like, where do they sell pull-out couches now?
Yeah, it's not a thing, really.
No, it's like a full bed that people are...
Yeah, the Murphy bed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, now, like, the old-school, like 4,000-pound pull-out couch that you... Once it's in your house, it's in for the rest of time. You can't get rid of it.
With that bar that goes horizontally right across it.
That's what this was. Old school, like, Chesterfield / pull-out couch from 1964. And I was struggling.
Were you at Del Boca Vista visiting Jerry's parents?
Shoulder pain, back pain, horrible attitude, no sleep. Awful. And kids can just cruise right through it.
They could sleep in any... Yeah,
she had no issue. No issue at all. But I was dying, man. It is a universal truth. You cannot find a comfortable pull-out couch.
And what's the temperature situation like? Because that could make it just even worse.
It was cold.
Okay.
Yeah.
At least you had that. Because if it was hot...
Yes.
And you had the pull-out couch going, you're full miserable for 3 days.
Then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You're in a lot of trouble.
You know, one of the great mysteries of society, fellas, is how the heck did we, as a group of human beings, go for decades and decades with those horrible pull-out couches that we all have slept on and cranked our backs and hurt our necks and woken up miserable, when suddenly some guy said, you know what, I'm going to invent an inflatable mattress that's actually quite comfortable.
Yeah,
it doesn't take up nearly as much space, isn't 5,000 pounds, you won't kill yourself getting it out of your house, and you have to saw it apart to get rid of it. I mean, why did this take so long?
It's a great question.
So you like the inflatable bed?
I like it a lot better than a pull-out couch.
Well, it's way better than a pull-out.
Are you a camping guy? Like, would you're not going camping with that?
Not a camping guy at all.
So I have no experience with I've never experienced it because I've never been camping. I won't go camping. I have no situation where I'll ever need an inflatable bed.
But it's great for, like, if you're, you know, if you're with a lot of kids, like you're sharing a cottage with different families, or you're on a weekend with all your buddies.
Yeah.
And we have access to one, and you're right, Dave. We didn't even think to bring it, you know, but it is huge. It's a massive upgrade, man. It's a 5-star upgrade.
Really?
It's not. It really is. Four Seasons compared to a motel. Pull-out couch.
Wow.
And it is. It's not even close.
It's a game changer.
It's air.
That's exactly what it is.
There's no bar trying to send you
you're
to
not
an operating
just like,
room.
You're not just like getting swallowed up into this thing?
No,
like it's firm enough?
No, it's very... If it's been filled up appropriately, right, Dave? You know what's up. It's a thing of beauty. The mattress.
Yeah, you get a really prime. You get a prime inflatable with a decent. You got to get the motorized pump. And they do leak. I've seen one.
Sure.
I've been on one that leaked mid, and then like I woke up at 2 a.m. And I'm like basically on the floor because there was no air left.
That's what I'm picturing. It's a slow leak, and you wake up at 3 a.m.
That can
happen. Touching the floor.
That can happen. Still, the floor is better. The pull-out couch is the worst sleep. The worst. Period.
You were Jerry and Elaine.
It's the worst invention.
Weekend.
It's the worst invention. It's awful.
It's one of the worst inventions in human history.
Were you getting any sleep on that?
It really is.
No, it was terrible. And I have a kid with me. That's another whole ordeal. I mean, listen, we had a great time. Our friends were awesome, gracious hosts.
Awesome.
But they heard about me on that pull-out couch.
Oh, I bet they did.
They heard me coming. That's another thing. The thing, I'm a big dude. Me trying to roll over. And you're moving constantly because your shoulder's asleep. Your neck is killing you. And I'm waking up the whole place. Because it's just a monster trying to move around. It was uncomfortable, and I was uncomfortable from the hop. Anyway, we got a guy on the line who I'm sure doesn't really care about any of this. He is a longtime MLB closer, 2007 World Series champ down in Boston. We know him up here in Toronto. He was up here a lot. And the Jays, when they were down at Fenway, they saw him a lot. Now he's working with Better Than Vegas, and he joins us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Here is Jonathan Papelbon. What's up, Jonathan?
What's up, fellas?
How we doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, man. They said that, Better in Vegas put me on. They said, you want to go on a radio show with three of the ugliest dudes ever? I said, hell yeah.
All right, well, listen, man, they put the three of us on TV. What do you make of that? If we're the three ugliest guys of all time, or one of them, how do you explain us being on TV?
Dude, I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's probably tough.
I don't know about that.
I'm not sure our bosses can really even explain that, if we're being honest. But it's great to have you on, man. We knew you well when you came up here a lot with the Sox and Philly. I mean, you picked two tough markets to play in. Like, those are two great baseball towns, two great sports towns, but tough towns. Did it make you tougher being a Red Sox, being a Philly, having to go through the grind of the media and the fans and the way they can react to wins and losses?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, man, because, for me, there was no market big enough for me, really. I didn't think anybody was ever going to expect more from me than I did myself. And, I loved it. Being a closer, man, you're coming out, and, the atmosphere is what I fed off of, man. And so I enjoyed every last minute of it. When I went to Philadelphia, I was like, bring it on. Too bad we ended up sucking, but I believe if you would have put me somewhere else in a small market team, I don't think I would have been as successful. So that's just the way I rolled, and I fed off of it, man. I loved it. So yeah, I mean, I love the big market.
Jonathan, we're seeing a situation here with the Blue Jays where they had high expectations coming into the season. A lot was expected to them from them, and they haven't really delivered. Can you recall any moments in your career where you might have been in a situation like that, where the team, there was, high hopes, and the team just couldn't get it going? What was that experience like, and what was it like in the clubhouse?
Oh, man, yeah. Look, when I went to Philadelphia, I thought I was going to win at least two more championships. Honestly, I did. And, I mean, we had Roy Halladay. Blue Jay himself. Roy Halladay, Cole Hamels, Cliff Lee, Jimmy Rollins, Chase Utley, myself, Ryan Howard. I mean, bro. Would you not think that we were going to win a bunch more, too?
Oh, yeah.
Right? I just named off. I didn't make the Hall of Fame pass the Hall of Fame ballot this year, but I was on it at least. I mean, you're talking about a bunch of possible future Hall of Famers. And I'm like, look, man, we're going to win this thing. And then we didn't, right? And guys started getting hurt and kind of, hit the fan. And look, at the end of the day, I even said publicly that, hey, I didn't come here for this. I didn't come here to lose. And the Philly fans didn't take a liking to that until they realized that, damn, this is my kind of guy. Like, he come here to win, and then we ain't winning. Like, and so I think the fans got me in that aspect, but I think some of them were kind of butthurt a little bit about it. But I mean, at the end of the day, it is what it is, and we were expected to win, and I enjoyed that, and we didn't. We didn't even come close to winning what we were expected to win, and. At the end of the day, I didn't want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of a winning team. And, lo and behold, I go to Washington, and we didn't win there either. And kind of, hit the fan.
Hey, Jonathan, we've been sort of looking at the Blue Jays team this year and specific guys who've underperformed. And, there's been notable guys on the pitching staff that have, been paid well and just haven't been able to bring the game the Blue Jays bet they could bring in Jose Berríos and Yusei Kikuchi. What are you seeing when you look at those guys who just have not been able to sort of, find the plate and kind of become the threats that the Blue Jays clearly thought they would be on the mound?
Well, to me, it boils down to the scouting department, it boils down to the front office, man. Like, if you're going to give these guys a bunch of money, you better know what the hell's going on with them first. I mean, look, at the end of the day, you're there for one thing, that's to win ball games. And regardless if you're in Toronto or Boston or New York or Baltimore, look, you're in the premier division in the Premier League. Right? Like, you better come to play. And if you're not, you're going to be in big trouble. Like, this is the hardest division in baseball. bar none. And if Toronto doesn't scout well, they don't prepare well, they're going to get beat up. Same way like Boston this year. Their trade deadline was atrocious. What is Boston doing this year, too? So, look what they're doing. They're getting beat up. And now you got the team like the Orioles who are kind of sneaking into this situation, right? And so, man, it's a ruthless division, and it always has been. And so, I think for Toronto, man, it's just you really, really have to do all the little things. Make the good moves. Make the good long-term signees. Bring in, call up the guys that are ready and are going to help contribute. And it's just not happening with them this year, really, like they expected. But I mean, hell, you look even back in the days of Anthopoulos. What was his name?
Alex Anthopoulos. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, from the very beginning. It's been kind of a struggle. And so, in this division, man, it's tough. It's tough. And, in my opinion, you got one of the biggest stars in the game right there with Junior, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't waste him. Do not waste him. Do not pull an Anaheim Angels and have two of the best players in maybe history with Ohtani and Trout and not get to playoffs. I mean, they're wasting those two guys away, in my opinion.
Yeah, they are. We're chatting with Jonathan Papelbon, longtime MLB closer. You can find him now at Better Than Vegas. Another young stud who is wasting away would be Fernando Tatis Jr., and he's wasting away because he's taking PEDs and he got clipped, and now he's done for the rest of the year. And you have been vocal about how you would handle Tatis Jr. if he was at the plate and you were still on the mound. Can you take us through why I believe you said you would hit him every single time you faced him? It seems harsh. Can you explain your reasoning?
Yeah, actually I did. I said that on my Twitter. Yeah.
Okay.
So I got this new Twitter, now at the real JPAP58. I kinda just now got it. Man, I love it. I love it because actually what I did say was that not that I would hit him every time. I said I would drill him in the ribs or the head every time.
I see. That's even more extreme.
More specific.
Yeah, okay. Sure. Yeah. We want to be specific on this show. I like it.
Yeah. To be more specific, that's exactly what I said on my Twitter. And I still stand by it right now. And I won't waver from that at all. To me, I busted my ass my whole career, man. I worked my ass off. I did it the right way. Never got busted for drugs or steroids or any of that. And to me, when you have a guy that comes in here first, okay, he gets in a motorcycle accident last year, which, could have voided his contract. But the Padres said, oh, we'll let this slide. That's their first mistake. They shouldn't have let that slide. Because before you signed to a $300 million deal. Then the very next year, the guy's on the injured, he's on the IL, and pulls this stunt of taking steroids. Well, to me, you're cheating me. Right? You're cheating me on all the work that I put in. You're cheating me and all the stuff that I've given up to play this game and sacrifice to play this game. And it's just in the olden days when they were playing poker, right? What if they caught him cheating, what would happen? Pow, see ya. You know what I mean?
Right.
So to me, it's almost the same way as that's my version of, pow, I got you. Pow, I hit you in the ribs. Pow, I hit you in the head. Like, you won't do that again? Well, still, you won't get another one. Well, to me, then you have the aspect of, oh, man, I was taking this cream, and this cream had some anabolic steroids in it, and blah, blah, blah. No, that's bullshit, man. Don't give me that, And so... I'm sorry, I can't say that.
We got you. I think we muted that one out. But yeah, we're good. Just
okay. So
keep it on the rails. We're good. No, all good.
Yeah. So So to me, it's like this, right? So you're going to go on and now start trying to make excuses for your actions, right? Well, everybody knows that that's not true. Okay, first of all, you got a ringworm. You don't take anabolic steroids for a ringworm.
Right.
Then you got daddy and mama trying to come to the rescue to their son. And, oh, no, the dad says it was a hair product. Shut up. Like, shut the hell up, man. Like, okay, Andy Pettit. Here's an example. Andy Pettit, he gets busted, right? Y'all remember that, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
What does he do? He apologizes to the team in a team-only meeting and apologizes publicly. I did this. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And I'll do everything I can. It'll never happen again. What happened? Everybody apologized. We're all good. And Andy Pettit is still in the game and still is, you know, hell, he still got commercials on TV. So that's the way you handle that. It's like, you know, it's like when my wife tells me to go out and clean the kitchen. And then I don't clean it, and I try to make up some excuse for it. And no, you're supposed to clean the kitchen, right? Like, don't make up excuses. Like, be a man about it. Don't have, you know, Tatis, don't have daddy coming in and try to help you, or mama coming in and try to help. Like, dude, if this happened to me, you wouldn't hear from my mom or dad. Like, you wouldn't hear no excuses. First of all, I wouldn't do it. Second of all, if I did, be a man about it. Be a man about it and just say, you know what, I effed up. And that's it. Then it's done. But now you're dragging this out. Now the team's got to answer a bunch of questions about it. It becomes a bigger deal than what it is. And you know, if I'm a teammate of his, I'm going to be just as pissed as Clevenger is, you know? And another thing that struck me was all of his teammates were like, no, he ain't been here all year. We don't need him. We're at. He hadn't been here.
Yeah.
So that'll tell you another thing. When your teammate starts saying stuff like that, that's when the real truth comes out.
I appreciate the honesty from the baseball guys, hey, because coming from a hockey background, guys would play that so vanilla if that situation happened. You would never want to say anything, but I love how they have no problem just throwing him under the bus. Jonathan, I want to get your opinion on the pitch count, and we see it now way more than ever where if a guy hits his pitch target, let's say it's 75, 80 pitches, regardless of the game, if he's, you know, he's got one hit, no hit, like we're seeing guys come out of the game. Where are you at with that, and do you like it?
Well, you know, I don't think there's really much control over it because, you know, the game changes. The game evolves and the game changes and there's really nothing you can do about it, right? So for me, I kind of accept it. You know, I know a lot of old school guys like Shillett, Pedro Martinez and them guys who throw 140 pitches. You know, 30 games a year, they throw 140 pitches. And so they're a little bit, they don't think like me on this issue, but the game changes and there's nothing you can do about it. And that is just the way the game's changing. And, to be honest with you, I've talked this on my podcast. You know, they got me, I got a podcast now with Better Than Vegas, Blackjack and Pal. And, you know, we can cuss on, we can talk more smack on the NBA radio.
Right.
So, you know, I believe that there's really not – we're going to get to the point where you may not see starters anymore. You may just see everybody – you know, you might have the guy that starts the game, but next week he might be closing the game. I think you're going to just see a all-hands-on-deck style pitching staff. That's my prediction.
So, Jonathan, we still have – for as long as we do, we still have closers – and we still have the walkout song from the bullpen. I saw a great clip. I think a lot of people have seen it, of the Edwin Diaz point of view clip where all the trumpets are bringing him in to close the game for the Mets. You know that New York had Mariano Rivera and Enter Sandman. Where do you rank those two against your song coming out of the Boston bullpen, shipping up to Boston?
Okay, well, first of all, I said this on my podcast. I mean, to me, when I came in Boston in Fenway Park, the fans went nuts. Beer was thrown in the stadium, and hell, half the time I might be drinking beer with them after the game. But, you know, to me, Mariano was good and everything, just because he was kind of almost like the godfather of posers. But especially in New Yankee Stadium, it was, the fans were kind of like, hidey-ho-hum, here comes Mariano again. He's going to close the game because it's what he does, you know. But the fans weren't it. Like, to me, it's all about the fans. We play the game for the fans. And look, man, I got Mariano third. I got me number one just because when I came into the game, Fenway Park got crunk, and everybody was blitzed and drunk by then. And then I got Edwin Diaz number two just because look at what happens in the stadium. Everybody's getting ready. Everybody's pumped up, and it's an event. I got Mariano three and then Hoffman four after that.
Okay. I like it. Yeah, listen, I mean, that's got – there's a party that's – got to be thinking Sox versus Yankees. Like, did you just immediately hate the Yankees when you showed up to your first camp as a Boston Red Sox? Was it, like, immediately known? You fly down to JetBlue in Fort Myers. They're like, you hate New York as of today. Or did that have to build up over time?
The moment I got drafted, I realized now is the time you start hating the Yankees.
Right.
Period. Like, the moment I got drafted, I started realizing that if I don't keep the Yankees out, I'm not going to be here very long. And I was fortunate enough to be very successful against the Yankees in old Yankee Stadium and in new Yankee Stadium and in Fenway, right? So to me, shoot, with player development, I knew it right away. Mm-hmm. It was understood that for all those years the Yankees were and they were the top of the mountain, and then 2004 we came back and beat them, and it was like, okay, it's on now. Like, we ain't taking no more crap from the Yankees no more, and you're going to hate them. And I don't care if it takes you drilling somebody to lose the game. If that's what we got to do, we got to do. We're going to stand in here and we're going to fight, period. Like, it was the Red Sox way.
We're chatting with Jonathan Papelbon. So you're working with the Better Than Vegas network. You guys are doing stuff with the Queen's Plate. Is that my understanding? We got the Queen's Plate cooking up
here.
Yeah,
man. Yeah.
All right. I like it.
That was my first horse race. I've never even been in a first horse race. We're coming up to Toronto, man, which I love Toronto. I always love to play. I give mad props to see at Toronto, man. I always love the Rogers Center, too. I love playing there. I do. Look, I love Toronto. And,
all right.
And, the guys at Better Than Vegas said, hey, you want to come to Toronto? I said, yeah, for what? And he said, the Queen's Plate. You didn't have to tell me for what it was. I was in, you know? And lo and behold, I've never been to a horse race event at all. And I come to find out it's the oldest running stable, right?
Is, yeah, that's right.
That? 163rd year.
That's
and,
right.
Yeah, man, my wife's got her hat ready. I got my suit ready. I got a full camo suit. I'm ready to represent. And I can't wait. Honestly, it's going to be a blast. So if y'all are there, come out and see, let's have a beer together.
We
man.
Will. We'll find you, man. It is a blast. You're right. You got to have the big hats and the suits, the whole nine. It's a party. So you enjoy your time up here. Good luck with the podcast, being on Twitter, the whole nine moving forward, Jonathan. We really appreciate you finding time for us. Thank you for this.
Yeah, man, I enjoy talking, guys, and like I said, man, y'all come holler at me at the Queen's Plate, man. We'll have a drink for sure, man. Have some fun.
You got it. We'll look forward to it. There he is, Jonathan Papelbon, former MLB closer, World Series champ, now with Better Than Vegas. He's going to be up at Woodbine for the Queen's Plate.
Yeah, man.
That is a character right there, man. Yeah. Jonathan Papelbon. Twitter, it sounds like he's
new to Twitter.
You know, if you're new to Twitter, you're sending out explosive tweets.
You're what Twitter was, you know, 10 years ago.
Yes.
We were just tweeting all kinds of stuff.
Like, where is this tweet going to go in 2010?
Yeah.
Now, if you've been on Twitter for like 12 years, you're like done with Twitter.
You don't tweet that much.
Yeah, you're like, I
Very
don't need
vanilla.
To tweet that much. I don't need, you know, trolls coming after me. I don't need to have fights, you know, back and forth.
Yeah.
If you are relatively new, like Papelbon apparently is, you do not have the same standards.
That's what they call a
when it comes
keeper
to Twitter.
Grappler. Keep
yes.
that one because that guy was awesome.
Yeah, he's got some big personalities. A Southern guy. He's from Louisiana. I'm sure you could tell that. The swearing was a lock. Like, anyone that has a podcast where they admittedly, like, they advertise that they love to swear on their own podcast,
yeah.
at some point, they're going to swear on this show.
He caught himself.
In my, just, you know, pre-interview conversation with him. We can talk about this in the break, but I was concerned with our pre-interview conversation.
Yeah, so
I reminded multiple aircrafts? Times that this is a PG show.
It's all good. Listen, JP's on the board. He took care of business. It happens. You know, you get real people on here having real conversations. Things are going to happen.
Yeah.
From time to time. But we appreciate Jonathan Papelbon joining us. Role play level of concern is coming up. Brandon Bean, the GM of the Buffalo Bills, in just over 40 minutes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, thanks again to Jonathan Papelbon for joining us. Definitely wasn't sure what to expect. I mean, listen, he's an outspoken guy. He's a big personality. Takes a lot of issues with Fernando Tatis Jr.
Yeah.
Said something interesting, though, about, you know, what Tatis Jr.'s teammates are possibly revealing to the world about how they feel about him. Mm-hmm. And probably just how disappointed you'd be. Like, how could you not? Even if he's your buddy and all, although he hasn't been in the league that long.
Yeah, how many buddies could he have?
He's been on the team for, you know, a couple of years, but this year he has not been around the team at all.
Yeah.
He made his money. He maybe is flaunting his money, and he's never available. And if you're not available, at some point people are going to turn on you
guys
or forget
hate
about
that,
you.
Man. That drives guys nuts in the clubhouse, or the locker room. It doesn't matter what sport you're playing, right? Like, you got guys that are fully invested with a lot of discipline, the way they eat, the way they sleep, all the sacrifice they make. And you got a guy next to you doing this kind of stuff. It's garbage, man.
Yeah,
like, it sucks the life out of the room.
And the culture of baseball, guys, has always been, for the longest time, you have to wait to get paid, right? We only give the money to the older guys. We only give the money to the guys who've earned their bona fides as veterans. And so for this guy to roll in here, be a 2019 Rookie of the Year, come third in MVP voting last year, and suddenly get $340 million on his deal. I mean, you can see the built-in resentment when suddenly he takes that money and just shows he does not deserve it.
This guy's stealing money.
Multiple stupid things.
He's legitimately stealing money, Dave. Like, he should have to pay it back or something.
Well, he's going to have to pay for the 80 games. Right.
Yeah.
Like, they are going to take that out of
the contract. So do they pay him for when he had the motorcycle accident? Because I remember in the NHL contracts, like, if you got hurt outside of hockey, like if you did water skiing and you got hurt, like,
they could have voided it, but they didn't because he's Tatis Jr.
Part of the problem was they couldn't necessarily prove which motorcycle accident caused the injury. Because apparently there was more than one.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because it's not on the field. Like, a motorcycle accident, regardless of if it's
the
first or the second, doesn't occur on the field.
No, the fine print, I'm sure, would suggest the Padres could have voided the contract. Now, there would have been pushback from the union that would have been massive.
Yeah.
But they weren't going to do it because they want Fernando Tatis Jr. playing.
Yeah.
Like, they've invested in him. When he's on the field, he's a top five talent in the league. He's a superstar.
And I guess if you're
thoroughly
the Padres,
entertaining to watch play.
And if you're just dying to beat the Dodgers,
and you're like dying
you
for that
are
kind
just
of talent,
doing everything you possibly can to recruit talent, keep talent, beat the Dodgers.
Anyway, I'm sure Fernando Tatis Jr. will come up here momentarily because it is time now to roll out role play level of concern.
You can never, ever ask me to stop drinking.
I do. I really do.
All right, role play level of concern. We know the way that this works. We go around the table. The three of us will be basically handed either a person, place, or thing, and then a scenario revolving around that person, place, or thing, and then we need to come up with our level of concern. It's either a pint on the patio, which means no concern, six-pack and a couple of shots, mediocre concern, or Nick Cage leaving Las Vegas, which is a large amount of concern.
Yeah.
A lot of concern. All right, Frankie, you will start us off. You were playing the role of the PGA Commissioner, Jay Monahan, who was not in the room when Tiger flew in to chat with some of the, you know, big boys in golf.
Yeah.
That included Ricky Fowler for some reason. Isn't Ricky on, like, the Hooters tour now? Does he still play golf? Like,
well,
I'm not sure why Ricky Fowler is
involved
in this.
Where's Ricky's live offer? Did that get lost?
Maybe it did. Like, listen, he's a big name, but Ricky Fowler is not a player.
He fits the bill for Liv. You're a big name who had a little bit of success.
Right. Yeah. Oh, huge name. Very marketable player. But in terms of actual play and success, Ricky Fowler is not a top 20 player in the world.
I also think maybe that's why he's flying in with Tiger, because it's like Ricky got the offer, he turned down the offer,
he's shown
his loyalty, maybe, so now you get to ride with Tiger to the big meeting.
Maybe you're right. Anyway, level of concern. You're playing Jay Monahan.
Okay.
Frankie, what is your level of concern? Your future as PGA Tour commissioner is in jeopardy.
It's not a pint on the patio, but it's not Nick Cage. So I'm probably a six pack and a shot of vodka and some premium vodka at that. Listen, I think the fact that they're making a big deal out of Tiger coming in for this meeting and kind of acting as a sort of de facto commissioner for it should give you a little bit of concern. But ultimately, I think that Jay Monahan has done the best that he could given the circumstances, because, listen, you didn't know how to prepare for this league to kind of just come up out of nowhere, and the amounts of money that they're throwing at your players on your tour. So now you need to pivot, and you need to find ways to get your guys more money. Get your guys to maybe play less, because these are a couple of the things that have been brought up. But ultimately, you know you can't compete with the live money. So I don't know. There's certain things that are out of his control. There's certain things that are in his control that he's going to have to do. So yeah, it's not Nick Cage, but it's not exactly a pine on the patio either.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I don't think Jay Monahan believed this many players of prominence were going to go.
Yeah.
And I think that is his responsibility to sniff that out. And he didn't.
Yep.
I don't believe for a second he would have thought Koepka and DeChambeau were going, that Cam Smith is on the verge of going. Like, those are big hits.
Yeah.
Big hits. And that's on Monahan to figure that out, try to find a way to keep them from going. Clearly that did not happen, and it won't be happening with Cam Smith. So Monahan, I think he's on thin ice. I think he should be on thin ice.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's difficult to know who does he... Like, who would fire him? Who's in charge of the PGA Tour?
Tiger.
It could be Tiger.
Well, Tiger probably has enough power to do it. And ultimately, yeah, there's a board and all the rest of it.
Right.
But, the bottom line is, guys, the one thing I've heard, is players raise eyebrows when suddenly this LIV Tour, shows up. And guess what? Oh, our money gets better all of a sudden. Well, where did that money come from?
Exactly.
Why were we getting that money beforehand? Mm-hmm. Wasn't Jay Monahan looking out for us before the LIV Tour? But suddenly, now that the LIV Tour exists, we're getting paid more? That doesn't wash for some people.
No, and understandably so. They'll be sour about that, even though they'll benefit from it because now the money is in play.
Yeah.
But
sure.
Anyway, moving on here. Dave, you are playing the role of Aaron Rodgers, quarterback with the Green Bay Packers, who's been very outspoken recently about his young wide receivers in camp. He's been outright critical. He's been carving
them,
really, is what he's been doing. What is your level of concern? You're headed for a down year with such a drop-off at the wide receiver position.
Well, you know me. I'm Aaron Rodgers, so I don't do pints on patios. I don't do full Nick Cages. I do a big jug of psychoactive tea known as ayahuasca.
Right.
Emanates from the Amazon region, and I'm going to bathe in some ayahuasca because I am highly, highly concerned that all these young receivers can't catch my passes. They've been dropping them left and right in the preseason. The old guys I've got, like Alan Lazard and Randall Cobb, I like them, but they're old.
Mm-hmm.
And they ain't Devontae Adams, who, of course, left for the money. And I can't blame him for that. But, yeah, no, I'm heavily concerned. And I'm going to need a couple of cleanses and a lot of hallucinogenics to get over it.
Yeah, I think you should be. Because this that you are facing right now, at least based on the depth chart, Aaron Rodgers, what Tom Brady was facing his last two or three years in New England.
Ooh.
Like, it is basically, it's all on you. It's going to be on the run game. They have a great duo of running backs. They do. They still have Jones. They have Dillon. They've got an offensive line that is makeshift right now at best. I don't know if Bakhtiari is going to play. But, yeah, you don't have Adams. Randall Cobb is effectively finished. Alan Lazard is more of like a slot third option. You got Sammy Watkins, but who the hell knows what he's going to bring to the table?
Who knows?
Yeah, he's not a number one. He never has been at any point in his career. So, yeah, I like that. Whatever you're taking, take more of it because you should be concerned. I am playing the role of Bo Bichette. Level of concern, you will not hit higher than fifth in the lineup the rest of the season. I'm sensing a trend here. I am not Nick Cage in Vegas. I am not a pine on the patio. All right, there's still a lot of baseball left. I believe that this front office wants to believe in me. I, Bo Bichette, was given more of a rope than I probably should have to remain in the top five in the order. I was playing, you know, I was hitting second forever when Charlie was around. I missed Charlie. Now he's gone. I get moved back to the five hole. Obviously, I didn't perform well enough. Now I've been hitting seventh. I've been hitting sixth. But looking around, George Springer's not a guarantee to play.
Yep.
Not a guarantee. Chapman's hot. Gurriel's hot. That could end at any point. They both deserve to be above Bo Bichette in the lineup. But if Bo gets hot for a week or two, I think this is a guy they want to put in a premium position. They believe in Bichette when he's hot. He has performed to that level in the past. If he gets back to it at any point, or guys start going the other way, Chapman, Gurriel, Kirk, possibly, maybe Teoscar. It's a six-pack and a shot. Yeah. Not in the top five in terms of the lineup right now, and deservedly so, but can change quickly. There's still a lot of baseball left.
And that's the thing. That's why you can't go full Nick Cage, because you know you have the ability to provide.
Yeah.
It just hasn't happened for you right now, and now you're paying the price a little bit. You're hitting sixth, you're hitting seventh.
Deservedly so.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he's got an OPS under 750. Yeah. He strikes out too much. You know, he's chasing counts.
He looks lost. Like, he looks a little lost right now.
Bichette has not been in a good place really all year. Yeah. Like, it's not been a consistent season for Bo Bichette, but it's not as if the guys ahead of them, outside of Vladdy, and if Springer's healthy, he's hitting first. But outside of that, you know,
it
can be interchangeable. And Bo Bichette can likely move around. All right, Frankie, you are playing the role of Yusei Kikuchi.
Oh, boy.
Do we really even need to ask the question?
Yes. There you go. Never, never ask me to stop drinking.
Apologies, Frankie. I shouldn't step on your toes.
No,
but
it's okay.
Yusei Kikuchi. Level of concern you've made your final start as a Blue Jay.
Well, do we need to play it again? It seems redundant.
Yeah.
Can you never, never ask me to stop drinking?
Well, here's the thing. He's got two more years left on his deal. He's going to make $10 million next year. He's going to make $10 million the year after that. So there has to be a glimmer of hope in Yusei Kikuchi, in myself, Yusei Kikuchi, that I will make
really?
Another start for the Blue Jays. But I haven't pitched well. I stink.
Yeah,
I can't
stink.
Throw a strike. I get rocked early in games. So why do I deserve to make another start for the Blue
you
Jays?
You don't.
I don't.
You don't.
I'm horrible. But I'm going to go to the bullpen. Maybe I can pitch a good inning out of the bullpen one time. Then maybe I can pitch two good innings out of the bullpen. And then from there, maybe next year I can make a start for the Blue Jays if they don't find a way to get rid of me. But I am just grasping at the slightest straws right now, because I think it's going to be a very tough road for Yusei Kikuchi, other than the fact that he's getting paid a lot of money.
Yeah, and that's why I think they brought him back the last time, when they came up with the neck issue that
yes.
placed him on the IL. The only reason he returned was because, or the only reason you returned Yusei Kikuchi, was because of the price tag. That's the only reason.
Yep.
You had no right
that's
to
it.
Return.
There's
you have been
an investment.
Awful since the hop. So you've already got one bullet that's been used in terms of that return. Now, it's interesting you mentioning, you know, can he get through a couple of innings? Is it like an opener? Would that classify as a start for Yusei Kikuchi?
Ooh.
If they
yeah.
look at him at some point, Dave, I guess it would classify
yeah.
as that. Like, can you give us two innings, once through the order effectively, and we're getting you out? Maybe they
maybe
have to do that
it.
At
maybe,
some point.
Maybe if you reframe it and lower the bar for him and say, we don't expect anything other than, you know, give us two innings. You don't have to give us a start. No quality starts. Five innings, forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Give us two. And maybe, but if I'm giving you advice, you say, I'm saying get ready for spring training. You'll get one more spring to prove you've turned it around, because the investment is so big and they got no chance of getting any return on you. And guess what? If you can't do it, Nick, by next spring, you're done.
Yep. Yes, you and deserve
thank
it.
You,
so
Dave.
Now you'll be done as a rich man, but you'll be done likely here in Toronto. Speaking of rich, Dave, you were playing the role of the San Diego Padres. San Diego Padres, what is your level of concern? Your investment in Fernando Tatis Jr. is going to be a disaster.
Got to play it, JP.
You can never, never ask me to stop drinking.
you know, it's a good thing San Diego's a pretty good drinking town. Mm-hmm. That gas lamp district, beautiful patios, gorgeous sports bars. And if I'm A.J. Preller, the presiding executive on the baseball side of the San Diego Padres, I'm trolling some bars in these next few weeks, man, because I'm down on my luck.
Big time.
I just pulled off one of the biggest trade in the history of the sport to bring in Juan Soto. There was all this hope that, hey, I got Juan Soto, and I got Tatis coming back off this dumb motorcycle accident, wrist injury, and we are going to beat the world, and we might even beat the L.A. Dodgers. And now I look, and I'm 17 years behind the Dodgers, and I look at the next dozen years with a guy getting paid ridiculous amounts of money in Tatis Jr., who I cannot trust, and who, by the way, has shown zero accountability for the multiple dumb things he has done since he got that money.
Well, and furthermore, has Tatis Jr. been taking PEDs the whole time? And if so, have we been seeing inflated stats because of the PEDs?
Yeah.
Like,
good
did
question.
He just get caught now, and has he been using in the past? And if he goes clean now, who are you getting? What are you getting for a $340 million investment? It is a disaster right now. He's got a lot of time to rectify the issue if you're Tatis Jr., but it's not feeling good.
A lot of time to make it worse, too.
A lot of time to make it worse. Yeah. Yep, that's right. All right, final one. I'm playing the role of Patrick Reed. Level of concern, your legacy as a golfer will be that of a cheater, not as a Masters champion. Well, I'm inclined to play it, but I'm not going to play it because that last little caveat that was read there, that is significant.
Yes.
You can call me Patrick Reed whatever you want. You can call me litigious. Like, this lawsuit against Brando Chambly and the Golf Channel is so frivolous. It's so stupid. It's such a waste
thing
of time.
I've ever seen.
It's the dumbest thing ever. He's suing him for defamation. $750 million, I believe. And effectively what it reads as, you're mean to me, and I don't like it.
You pointed out a fact about me, and I don't like that.
Right. I have a history of cheating, and I don't like that you mentioned it. Yeah. And I went to live, and I hate that you mentioned that.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely absurd. But if this was U.S. Open champ, if this was PGA champ, if this was the Open championship, it'd be one thing. You can't get me out of that green jacket because I'm going to be in the clubhouse. I'm going to be at the champions dinner. I'm going to be there with Jerry Player teeing off early if I have to. You can't get rid of me, Patrick Reed. I don't care if you think I'm a cheater or not. I will be around for the rest of time. You ever see Larry Mize? You ever see him do anything else? But he's there every April.
Same with Sandy
flashing
Lyle.
Flashing it around. Sandy Lyle. So I will be in your face as long as I have to be. I am a Masters champ. So six-pack and a shot because clearly I'm a delicate flower, the fact that I'm suing people because they're mean to me. Obviously, legacy is an issue.
Very sensitive.
But Masters champ is a Masters champ.
Yep.
And it's
significant. Always be branded a champ.
And it's always going to be there. It's always going to be
there. If he was worried about being branded a cheater, guess what? He probably wouldn't have cheated. This guy has zero conscience.
Right.
Yeah.
And if he had any common sense, he wouldn't have paid a lawyer to file a $750 million joke against the Golf Channel and Brando Chambly.
It is outrageous.
This lawyer got rich doing it, or I'm assuming he's getting pretty rich doing it.
Yeah.
And anybody will take your money in this world. We all know that.
This is the one guy that you can tell the PGA Tour, they are so happy he left.
Yeah.
Like, they are like, we don't want to be associated with Patrick Reed. You're a pain in the ass. Get out of here. You know, just leave. So there you go. There's your role play level of concern. All right, Brandon Bean, the GM of the Buffalo Bills, will join us in about 15 minutes. What's up in camp? How are we feeling about opening night? The Bills are at the Rams to start the season. We'll catch up with Brandon later on this afternoon. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Brandon Bean, GM of the Bills, in about 10 minutes. Canada back in action tonight, so we're out here at 6:30. I haven't seen any news on this. Players only meeting in the PGA Tour, and Tiger Woods showing up.
Yeah.
I don't know what Tiger can accomplish outside of saying, I'm going to start playing again on the tour.
Yeah.
He doesn't play on the tour. So him being around and him being vocal and him supporting them, it's worthy of something in terms of symbolism. But you want to crush Liv, and you are anywhere in terms of prominence, in terms of people following it, seeing it on TV. Tiger's got to play.
Yeah.
He plays, the PGA Tour will flourish.
Problem is, man, he can barely walk.
He can't play.
Like, he can't.
He can't play.
I'm sure, like, if he could, he probably would. Especially with what's happening with Liv now. He knows he has the power to draw a bigger audience and more money, right?
That's an interesting question, Dave. Do you think if he was fully healthy, do you think Tiger would play 30 tour events?
No.
No, me neither.
Not even close.
Well, not 30.
Scariest
no,
thing,
but
guys?
20 then, whatever it is.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't think he would.
He'd play his usual 15, 20, whatever. That's even a little high for his age. You know what scared me, guys? You talk about the bad leg. Why does this guy get off a private jet and then jump in the driver's seat of an SUV?
Right.
Can't this guy get a driver? How many
right.
bad car accidents does this guy need to be in before he gets a driver as a billionaire?
Committed to the drive. Even Ricky Fowler. Like, let Ricky drive. Ricky, I'm sure, can bring something to the table. Come on, Ricky.
Yeah.
Get behind the wheel. But yeah, Tiger.
I'll get him, man.
No. Private bird right into a car. Exactly.
Jeez.
Uber.
Uber Black, Dave. Uber Black.
Across the board.
Exactly.
All right, Brandon Bean coming up in the final half hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.